a taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene. Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning. Welcome to Spoken Word on 3CR. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Wurundjeri of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and present. Today on the show, I have Robbie Coburn. Robbie has published several collections of poetry and has now released a verse novel, The Foal in the Wire, published by Hachette. Welcome to the show, Robbie, and congratulations on what is a wonderful and moving youth verse novel.
Thanks so much, Tina. It's so lovely to be here.
Robbie, you've written a powerful story of first love, family trauma, and ultimate hope, all wrapped up in the urgent care of an injured foal. Now, the book is in three parts. Would you read the opening poem, Foal, which beautifully sets the mood of the book, and tell us what drew you to the story?
Foal. As I run down the veranda steps in the dark, I can still hear them screaming at each other inside the house. He doesn't love her, and she doesn't love him, but they stay. I wish my words could change us, teach our bodies to know one another differently. I want to teach him to love her the way he can teach a horse to run in the right direction. I wish you could change people's behaviour like you can with a horse. I know they blame me for holding them together here. I try to be invisible. As I walk down the path towards the horse track, I notice the stillness of the farm as their voices fade into the distance. No sound but the wind through the grasses of the paddocks on every side. On the farm's border, I see there is a girl standing at the fence. Julia. The girl my age from the next property. We have spoken before, but in this darkness, our bodies are strangers. Sam. I can hear her call my name, hear the ache of her voice wheeling me towards her. As I meet her eyes at the paddock's edge, I see she is standing over a wounded foal. I can smell the blood and hear the panicked breathing. Hers and my own, and the faltering breath of the injured foal tangled in barbed wire, the trembling shape of a body in the grass. The Foal in the Wire, I think, is a book that I always needed to write and wanted to write. I just didn't realise it until the idea was put to me. So not the idea for the story, that's obviously mine, but my agent was reading my poems and suggested to me that some of them resemble a young adult verse story. They had a narrative quality to them. And it was a light bulb moment, and I realised that it made so much sense for me to write a young adult verse novel, and it was always something that I had wanted to do, and but it just hadn't occurred to me to write anything outside of individual poems. So once that was put to me, it just came to me very organically from there, and it was a perfect medium to really address some things that I wasn't able to in individual poems previously, and especially around growing up.
Well, the first time I read The Foal in the Wire, I was struck by its emotional power and the intensity of the unfolding drama. Now, the second time I read it, I was absorbed by the world you create, its sensual dimensions. Apart from the obvious fact that you're a poet and that your agent, to some degree, encouraged you to write this story, why tell it as a verse novel with the sort of epic dimensions that it has? At times, the story reaches, at least for me, beyond itself. We may not have an injured foal in all of our pasts, but we've all felt the intense bonding over a traumatic event. Why not choose the more leisurely pace of a novel to tell the story?
I've always thought that brevity is the best approach when it comes to dealing with anything that, particularly around heavy emotions. as you said, it's the obvious choice for me is poetry. I have no desire, honestly, to write anything except poetry. I find when it comes to dissecting and really exploring emotions, especially difficult emotions, poetry is the best avenue to do that. I think sometimes with prose, it's a lot harder to capture that authenticity when you're explaining. Poetry is a lot more showing than telling, and especially with a teenage voice, it was the perfect medium to do that, I think. I think internal monologues and imagery that is harder to put forward in prose when you're explaining so much, I think it creates a lot of space for the reader to draw their own conclusions about what they think about certain things while still obviously driving a narrative forward. It's not as strict.
Would you read Creek House and talk about that poem?
Creek House. There is no sound but the foal's tortured breathing and a soft rain that has begun to fall against our hair and faces. We slowly drag the foal's body on the jacket through the grass towards the centre of the paddock. Julia stops and gestures to a dark opening in the earth, and I see that it is an empty creek. The foal will be safe here. The creek is 40 acres from Julia's house, and she says her dad never comes here anymore. I step down carefully onto the eroded dirt and rocks. Julia takes one side of the jacket, and I take the other, lifting the wounded body from the earth and slowly lowering it down. The foal feels heavy as it falls into my arms and against my chest. It makes no sound, but I can feel its breath against my skin and smell the panic escaping from its coat. Julia takes a small torch from her pocket. Inside the creek are rusted, burnt-out cars and other parts separated from their bodies. Engines the colour of horse manure that melt into the dark landscape. Doors, windows, wheels. Seats torn open and crawling with insects. There is the shell of an old Ford model resting against one of the banks, missing its interior. Only a cracked roof and a space where one of the back doors had once been. We pull the foal inside and let it rest underneath the roof. We stand on either side of its body, and as we sit down, our faces almost touch. I watch its chest rise and fall. I notice the area between its legs. The foal is a colt. I can hear the rain beginning to fall harder against the metal roof above our heads. No more pain. No more blood. No more wire. Only the safety of this abandoned shell protecting the foal from the night. We can be invisible here.
There's such intensity in that poem and such scene setting at the same time. This is the poem Creek House. It comes very early in the book. Tell us what you're doing there.
The setting of The Foal and the Wire is the farm where I grew up. There was a fence at the back of the property. So my father was a horse trainer and harness racing driver. So we had a horse track in the back paddock. And the fence that was the end of our property and led to the next, that is the setting of where this foal is found in the story. And as a child, I would climb through the fence into the next paddock, and there was actually a dried out creek in that paddock and a car shell and some other things. So all of that is very much a very real setting that I'm evoking in this story. And when you were asking before about where the book came from, and I mentioned the agent giving me the idea to write something like this, and why I think it's a book that I always needed to write, it's because it came so naturally, and it's very much drawn from where I grew up and a lot of the things that I was feeling when I was growing up. And this particular poem, it really just takes me there. To where I was, and if you went there now, unfortunately the farm is no longer there as our farm. But assuming that they haven't built on it yet, then I think if you visited the farm and crossed over into the next paddock, you would see the creek and the car shells, and it would very much just be the setting.
Well, the poem and other poems in the book have a very strong sense of a lived experience. It's a landscape that you know very, very well. But the book, of course, has all the elements of youth fiction. It's got bullying in it, absent parents, traumatized teenagers. But the story is told so powerfully that it crosses into adult storytelling. It dives deep into the characters as emotional terrain. And I'm wondering, does it awaken the trauma in all of us as a way of healing? And if so, is that part of your storytelling here?
It's definitely something that I wanted to explore. And I do that in all of my work. Depression and emotional pain is one of the underlying themes of everything that I write. And when it comes to writing about things that are difficult to write about in quote-unquote adult poetry, around bullying and around growing up, I found that it really was a healing experience for me to write this story. And it's definitely the work that I'm most proud of. And I think with what you're saying about there being healing in sort of confronting some of these topics, that's my great hope for the story, is that people that do read it, especially young people, will find some comfort and feel seen by reading it. And that's why it's dedicated to those who are wounded and surviving. I think there's the ultimate message of the story is survival.
Was it a painful book to write?
No, I think it was cathartic. And I became very invested in the story and the characters. And Sam in the story is very largely based on me. The story is fictional, of course. My parents have read the book and they can see I'm describing exactly the farm, the house, and everything is very much lived experience in terms of the landscape of the story. It was the first work that I've had come out that I felt 100% proud of. And I think it's the culmination of a lot of the things that I've been trying to explore with my work for a long time.
Let's have a poem.
Teenager. The earth was a box made of glass. The kitten learned how to sleep in the greyhound's jaws. When I dug a hole in the shape of my body, but left it empty, you couldn't hurt me anymore.
Tell us about that poem.
It is a poem that directly occurs after a confrontation between Sam and his bully. For me, it's the realization that you have escaped accepting that kind of treatment from people. And I think when you're bullied as a child, it really does set the tone for how you see yourself and the world. And for me, it's taken a long time, and it's something I still struggle with sometimes, is feeling any kind of self-worth or self-esteem, because I think when you're in those formative years where you're still trying to work out who you are and where you fit into the world, if you're taught that you're nothing, then you're going to go into life feeling like you mean less than everybody else. So that poem is definitely one that I'm very proud of, as a moment of I could have gone into complete oblivion, but I didn't, and I've gotten through to the other side of it, somewhat at least.
Therese Virtue here from Music Sans Frontières. Subscribe to 3CR for music programs dominated by Australian artists, supporting Australian music making and lifting your day with glorious sound. 3CR is a membership-based organisation. We depend on our members' support. That's why we make it so easy to subscribe. Call 9419 8377 or go online to 3cr.org.au. Welcome back. I'm Tina Janoukas, and you're listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I'm speaking with Robbie Coburn about his verse novel, The Foal in the Wire, published by Hachette. Robbie, the poetry in The Foal in the Wire can be shockingly brutal in its evocation of a traumatized adult world. One of the book's strengths is that it doesn't gloss over the violence represented by the injured foal. Could you read Returning and Leaving and tell us how deep you actually had to dig as a poet to bring emotional truth to the story.
Returning and leaving. I wait by the window all morning, watching cars pass by the front fence, travelling down the road towards Julia's place. At lunchtime, a white sedan drives past the front gate and stops before entering their property. It's not her dad's ute, and I can tell something is wrong. I watch the car progress down the driveway behind the trees, until all I see is the dust it throws up behind it as it reaches the car bay beneath an old shed beside the house. I stay there all afternoon at the window, watching the cars go by, waiting for nightfall. I can't eat or think of anything but Julia, walking back into that house with her dad in the room where she tried to vanish forever. When it gets dark, I run out to the fence at the back of the property and wait for what feels like forever. Then, I see her walking towards me in the distance, smiling. She looks sick, but she is still the most beautiful girl in the world. She throws herself into my arms and kisses me. She tells me she is okay and that she is sorry for what she did. She says she only wanted to stop thinking for a while. The people at the hospital had put a tube down her throat and drawn up the pills out of her stomach. They said she almost didn't make it. She tells me they knew about her dad once they saw the marks covering her skin. They said she can't stay with her dad anymore and has to go and live with relatives in another town, far away. They have only let her come home to gather her things. Her dad isn't here, and there is a woman who has come to look after her and will take her away again tomorrow. I hope they will take her somewhere better than this. Come with me. We can start again. I tell Julia I have to stay here to look after the foal. When I tell her I don't want her to leave, the world has already become a wound that swallows my body. It is quiet, and I feel something unnameable breaking, but I don't want her to see. I don't want to make this harder for her. She holds my hand. I love you. I love you. We don't say anything else. We just hold each other for what feels like hours that disappear in an instant. I don't want to have to imagine this paddock without Julia in it. I can see everything and wish I could cover my eyes. I wish I was still sitting by the front window watching the cars drive by, so I wouldn't know she is coming back home but not staying. It's definitely a poem that I had to dig deep to write, but it's something that is quite fundamental to my work in general, I think, to explore some of these darker themes. So I think I was very prepared to write the darker, more difficult parts of the story. And although the story is fictional, it's very much drawn from the difficulties that I had growing up and a lot of those feelings and traumas and quite extreme situations are at the very least reflective of some of the things that I was feeling and going through. So I think it was a lot easier to write than it probably reads. And I didn't want to shy away from anything, and I wanted it to be explicit enough in a way that it needed to be, but while still being mindful of not glamorizing anything or not writing something that's too confronting in a way that's counterproductive to what the work is trying to do. But I think it was important for some of these things to be discussed, especially around the difficulties that young people have. And they were difficulties that I had. So it was quite natural for me to write about them.
Let's have another poem on that theme.
Thinking. All day I think about dying. There are cows everywhere across the paddock, but they don't go down into the creek because they won't be able to climb back out again. I think about going down there and never coming back up.
Story is one thing, but a verse novel must also succeed as poetry. The poems in The Foal and the Wire are beautifully composed. How did you meet the challenge of delivering a powerful story of redemption in words that do singe with poetry.
Thank you. I wrote them as individual poems and I wanted them to stand as individual poems, and then I wove them together. So I had the story, but I treated every poem as an individual work of its own, and I do hope that it reads that way. I didn't want a poem to seem like it was just trying to carry the story forward at any point. I didn't want it to be something that just looked like a bridge to keep the work going. And there are parts in the book that are not linear and poems that don't necessarily contribute to the narrative, but continue to explore some of the emotions and themes in the work. But that was the main objective. You could turn to any page and it would be a poem. And if you were to publish the poem separately or show the poem separately to somebody, it would still be a powerful work.
The notion that every poem has to contribute to the narrative is not one that I would necessarily share, because even in a novel, not every word contributes to the central narrative.
I agree.
There needs to be expansiveness and so forth. Is the form of the verse novel something that you were very familiar with? Are there verse novels that influenced you or inspired you?
I was very familiar with verse novels, and it's a form that I very much admire and would consider myself a student of in a lot of ways, I think. Just growing up being a huge fan of, you know, Dante, Chaucer and Homer. And then, of course, you get Australian poets like Les Murray and Dorothy Porter. Particularly The Monkey's Mask was something that I really loved. But the biggest inspirations for this were a lot of the wonderful young adult verse novels, particularly writers like Stephen Herrick, Ronco Erge, Sharon Kerner. And I was very inspired by authors like John Marsden and Sonia Hartnett, Robert Cormier, Kevin Brooks. But verse novelists in Australia in particular were a huge part of me feeling that I could approach weaving this together. Another one as well is Karen Comer, who launched The Fall in the Wire. But I think because I wrote them as individual poems, my approach was very different to what I would have thought would be the general approach to writing a verse novel. It didn't necessarily go first poem written first, last poem written. I sort of wrote them as individual poems and wove it together. And these incredible verse novelists in the young adult field especially really gave me the inspiration to see what was possible, and that I could write it exactly as I wanted to, and it would still be able to work as a cohesive novel.
The protagonist, Sam, who in a way is your alter ego here, isn't simply sensitive in any cliched sense. He's thoughtful, moving beyond youthful narcissism to become a young man who recognises and accepts the fragility of the adults around him and his own. Would you retelling and tell us about the healing journey you went on in writing The Foal in the Wire? Now, I know that that wasn't your intention in writing this book, but there seems to me to be a kind of a healing journey that is being undertaken here.
I definitely agree with you that it was a healing journey, but I think because it came about so organically, it wasn't something that I set out thinking this is going to be a cathartic healing experience, but it definitely has saved me and helped me in more ways than I can describe, and definitely as well in coming to terms with myself and my own past telling. One morning, I lead my dad over the back fence through the paddock and down into the creek. I want somebody to know about how we found the foal, tangled in the wire and wounded, and how each night we have nursed him back to health. About Julia and her dad, and the night I saw him standing over her body. I begin to tell him I know what happens to sick foals who won't grow up to run with the other horses. This one has fight. They don't all make it, but this one will because of you two. He smiles and tells me he is proud of me, and that the foal can stay with us. He also tells me he is glad I am here on the farm with him. For the first time, I don't just see him as my dad, but as someone trying to make sense of everything in his life. I realize he is wounded like me, but doesn't know how to tell anyone. I tell him I love him and want us to be closer. Suddenly he hugs me, and we stay down there in the creek with the foal for a long time.
You see, I find that a very interesting poem because in contrast to the earlier poems in the book, Sam here is less injured. The voice changes. There's reflection in the voice. How did you get to that point in the narrative?
There was a point in the writing of the book when I realised it didn't need to be a narrative that necessarily had a happy ending or didn't, you know, wrap up in a really succinct way. I really admire writers like Robert Kumir especially. You know, the heroes don't win. They're not always happy endings. They often don't explain what happens in the end. And that's up to the reader. And I think giving your reader the space to work out what will happen in the story is a very powerful thing and generous thing as a writer to do. But for me, it really helped to get to that point in the narrative when I realised that Sam was able to overcome and find the strength to endure because of what he had experienced with Julia and the foal, without it necessarily needing to be because they live happily ever after, and that we are able to find the strength to within ourselves to carry on regardless of the pain that we have endured. But for me, that was a particularly special poem, and the relationship between Sam and his dad was especially important to me, especially growing up on a farm with a father who, you know, you view as very masculine and isn't necessarily as open to discussing emotions and poetry. I think it's a very world-altering moment when you realise that your parents are people. They don't have a rule book. They don't have an answer to everything. They are just doing their best the same way that we are. And I'm really glad that that was something that I was able to put into the book, because it's a big moment when you realise that everyone's just doing their best.
The book begins with an inward focus through the injured foal and ends expansively with a young man's rich insight into what has unfolded. And we've just been speaking about that. Would you read a final poem that for you captures not only the journey the characters have gone on, but also the journey that you hope the reader will go on?
I think the last poem in the book is the one that I feel closest to and the one that I think really captures the message, if there is one, that I could succinctly put of what the book is doing. And this is one that is completely separate from the narrative, but is ultimately links back to the dedication in the book and what I think I'm trying to achieve and hope this book will achieve.
And it's actually the poem that I hoped you would choose.
Oh, thank you. I always feel, is it strange to read the last poem in case people haven't read the book, but it's poetry. It's not going to affect the reading experience.
Exactly.
Negatively anyway. Wounded animal. You can create a life out of fear, but you don't have to. Sometimes, in the lightless room, it feels like the sky never existed and the horses have stopped running. Even the mare, who continually tried to run when you were a child. A loose nail on a fence post the horses had kicked loose, drove into her leg and tore her fetlock, the blood causing her white sock to turn red and pool on her hoof. She picked at the wound each day, tearing at the scab as if to make the reality of her injury untrue, attempting to run with the others, the blood forming patches in the grass for you to find as you followed her, and to finally see this now, and what has become of your life. Your skin will never understand the ache in your mind, even if you try to teach it. Like that mare who only ever thought to run again, maybe this scarred and haunted body is enough. The wounded animal is capable of survival.
Thank you, Robbie. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Tina. It's been incredible. Thank you.
I'm Tina Janoukas, and you've been listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I've been speaking with Robbie Coburn about his latest publication, The Foal in the Wire, published by Hachette. The verse novel, The Foal in the Wire, is available from all good bookshops and online. Spoken Word broadcasts every Thursday on 855 AM at 9 AM, or you can download the podcast. Thank you for listening.